This is Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. It's the last show of season two, so it only seems fitting to reflect on the past 21 shows and to touch on some of the experiences shared and lessons learned. Keep listening to hear the method to the madness behind my interviews and what piece of the puzzle each guest added, as we shared with you lessons about entrepreneurship from experts who are succeeding in this complex and ever-changing 21st century business environment. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Listening back to this past season, I heard many useful insights and tips, from how to start your own business and help it grow, to nailing down necessary funding and overcoming obstacles. Each guest candidly shared their tried and true business expertise. We had a very good mix of for-profits, nonprofits, startups, small companies, large companies, and industry leaders, and learned about a number of new business concepts, including the Biodome of Employment from jazz artist Erica von Kleist, the Creator Economy from VidCon's Jim Lauterbach, the Internet of Things from cybersecurity guru Sherry Davidoff, and the quote-to-cash business model from the Advanced Technology Group staff. Our season began with a very engaging conversation with Warm Springs Productions president Chris Richardson. Here he is discussing how to build a company you would want to work for.
I never could have predicted the success of our company growing this fast. But really, I mean, it's the simple philosophy of our company is treat people with kindness, respect, allow them to grow, promote within, and essentially build a company that I wanted to work at.
We also asked why Montana is such a fertile ground for business startups and entrepreneurship, particularly among women. Though, as Will Price, founder of Next Frontier Capital, pointed out, there is still quite a bit of room for improvement on that front, particularly in the funding arena.
When I got into the venture industry in 2002, I think there was about, you know, maybe 2 to 4% of decision makers were women. Until about a year ago, that was the exact same number. And so the venture industry has been perhaps the worst industry I can think of in terms of representation of women in roles of responsibility, decision making, and leadership. It's taken significant numbers, I think, of scandals, of kind of faux pas where people saying the wrong things in the industry, for the industry to kind of look at itself in the mirror and realize that not only are women underrepresented in the industry, but, you know, African Americans. Now, you can imagine the ripple effect of that. Like, if 90 of 100 people are making decisions, you know, how many women-backed entrepreneurs are there going to be? And if a lot of venture capitalists have come from successful entrepreneurial careers, if women aren't allowed to or not able to get financing to have their own entrepreneurial experience, then, again, that supply of talent is constrained unfairly. And so I think the baseline of where the industry is today, it continues to be unacceptable. I mean, I think it's, like I said, it's maybe 2 to 5% somewhere in there. All I can say is that there's more attention on the matter from the senior firms and the National Venture Capital Association that represents those firms to ameliorate and change that reality, but you're very right to point it out.
Most of the time, I try to stay out of the spotlight so our guests' experiences could be fully explored. But occasionally, I couldn't help but share some of my insights from my career of starting and running businesses and consulting across different industries, both locally and internationally. Many years ago, I had an event that we were managing called Kids Day, on a safe Halloween event. And we had a tagline called Treat 'em Right, and it attracted interest from Disney. And Disney put up a $100,000 sponsorship, and we were just elated, and we signed the contract. And then after all these events were over in 16 cities, we got a bill from Disney for $80,000. Because in the contract, there was a provision that they provided one score of music, one, you know, appearance of each of the characters, and if there were more appearances, we had to pay for them. And never thought that that would be a problem or an issue, but I didn't pay attention to the details in that case, and we got burned on that.
We had a very in-depth and fascinating conversation with Dr. Vadim Levitin about blockchain technology and cybercurrency and their impact on or disruption of technology as we know it. So among all of these blockchain technologies, will there be winners and losers? Will eventually there only be four or five or six different blockchain technologies being used by business and industry?
Well, at the beginning of kind of a networked world, when the internet started and we started using it for business, we were hoping, at least many people were hoping, that it will decentralize and liberate the marketplace. It hasn't really happened. What happened is what you described in your question. It's a kind of further consolidation. There are probably three, four major players online, from Google to Amazon, and it's just a new mediator. We always had mediators, you know, from banks to government, and now we have just a new set of mediators. What blockchain architecture promise is that since it's decentralized, it is very possible that we won't need it. For example, those of us who use Airbnb, you know, you stay at people's houses. Well, Airbnb is a company. Uber is a company. You don't really need for them to be in existence and charging 25% for their service. You could do blockchain-driven architecture doing exactly the same thing. It will accomplish the same thing. You will come and share the ride, or you will share the room. And you don't need a mediator. You don't need a middleman.
KOA's Toby O'Rourke, the first woman president and now CEO in the company's 57-year history, discussed how to build quality into a franchise operation, or any company for that matter. What do you look for in a franchisee, and how do they maintain the quality that 600 points would require?
Yeah, I'll speak to that inspection. We do believe in quality. There's a lot of ways to camp, a lot of places to camp. And at one time, KOA had over 1,000 campgrounds and then really took a hard stand on quality. We want to make sure when people come to a KOA that it's meeting our standards. So we do have inspection teams that go across the country and go to every KOA property to make sure they're keeping up with different standards on sites and facilities and service. But we look at those things very carefully when we bring on a KOA franchisee. So we get a lot of requests to become a KOA throughout the year, and we have to really take a hard look at that campground and make sure that it's going to deliver upon the experience that we expect, so our guests can come to know. You know, and sometimes KOA has been called the McDonald's of camping. You have, you know, not that everyone's the same, but you get a really good idea about what you're going to get when you go to a KOA. We take that as a compliment. We want to maintain that. That's why that inspection process is so important.
I had a very lively conversation with VidCon CEO Jim Lauterbach. VidCon is a global producer of events for fans, creators, executives, and brands who are passionate about online video and building diverse information and technology communities. Jim told us what creator economy really means.
Everybody is a creator. The power of the internet allows people to be a creator and to find an audience. And for the ones who put the time in and the effort and are talented, they can build a life.
One of the highlights for me of the entire year was visiting with Montana native John Connors, former CEO of Microsoft and now a managing partner of Ignition Partners, a Bellevue, Washington-based technology and venture funder. Listen as he talks about working shoulder to shoulder with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer during his 15-year career at Microsoft. You worked alongside two of the greatest business leaders in history, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer. What effect did that have on you? What skills, lessons transferred from that experience to your current work at Ignition Partners?
Well, the first thing I would say about those two gentlemen is incredibly hardworking people. And even as they gained, you know, wealth that was almost unimaginable to them and to the world, they continued to work as if they had nothing. The second thing is, it really didn't matter how wealthy you were, what your title was, they cared about what you thought and what you could contribute intellectually. The third thing is, they were unbelievably effective at recruiting talent. And finally, they were just incredibly focused on what's truth. And one of the things that was so fascinating about Microsoft is, if you had a meeting, PowerPoint was used extensively. Anybody presenting to Bill and Steve, if you had more highlights on your opening slide than lowlights, it was probably going to be a very bad meeting. They focused intensely on what are the things that need to be improved. They didn't focus on what are the things we need to celebrate. So remarkable men, and what's really remarkable is how effectively they worked together for all those years building one of the world's most important companies.
After her own stint in the business world of technology, Robin Bacay, founder of award-winning Bacay's Caramels, shared her hands-on approach of how to launch a product as a small business.
We started small. Everything was done with a hands-on and a test market. So I literally drove to the nearby towns, Big Sky, Montana, Livingston, Montana, and then Missoula, Montana, and then expanded to Spokane, Washington, and Denver, Colorado, and literally would drive up to places that looked like they might carry a gourmet candy, walked in, introduced myself, gave them samples, asked to speak to whoever makes decisions about new candies, and more often than not, they said, we'll give it a try. So I'd sell it right there to them on the spot and see where they were going to put it. I'd drive back to the store that had ordered it to see how it was going, because my background in sales told me I really need to see what they're doing. So if something isn't working, maybe I can see why and give them some suggestions on a better way to merchandise it or the like.
ATG, Advanced Technology Group, based in Missoula, Montana, has a fast-growing 130-plus employee company now owned by the global tech leader Cognizant. Here we listen to Claude Samory explain the quote-to-cash business sector and how they serve it.
Advanced Technology Group, we're a bunch of business consultants. We help businesses that are growing and thriving or looking to expand into new markets. We help them put together their systems and technology and processes that help them scale and grow. So everything from managing their customers and knowing who you are, Arnie, you know, as a customer to somebody like ATG or to somebody like one of our clients, as well as capturing the revenue. So if you're paying a bill or making a transaction or buying something from one of these companies, we help them optimize and install those systems.
In your literature, you talk about quote to cash services.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, it is kind of a version of what I just described. It's everything from when you present a potential customer with a quote of something they might buy, and then the process of negotiating through that. Arnie, you don't like the price that I proposed, you don't like the terms we're negotiating, to the point where we shake hands and have a transaction, and to the point where you start paying your bill. That is quote to cash. It's the full life cycle of managing a customer through buying something from your company.
Missoula's own Sherry Davidoff is a uniquely qualified hacker who big companies hire for cybersecurity. She is the subject of the fascinating new nonfiction book by Missoulian Jeremy Smith, Breaking and Entering, the extraordinary story of a hacker named Alien. Sherry and I discuss both what our listeners should know and be concerned about in our new connected economy and how to secure global clients from small town America.
By 2020, we estimate that there will be 30 billion devices connected to the internet. And that includes things like cars and smartwatches and smart coffee pots and your refrigerator and things like that. And the problem is that the vendors that make those, they're not always maintaining those devices. They're not installing software patches. And so these things get vulnerable. Or sometimes they're using default passwords. So maybe your refrigerator has a password of refrigerator. And the criminals can guess that. And there might be no way for you to change that. So that means that all of these devices, not all of them, a lot of these devices are just sitting ducks, waiting for hackers to come along and break into them.
You're in a competitive industry and you secure global clients. How do you recruit them from Missoula, Montana?
Getting clients in Montana certainly has been a challenge over the years because you have to work extra hard to get your name out. You know, we don't have the luxury of going to these big networking events all the time in New York or Seattle or places like that. So it's been a combination of tactics. Number one, I think it's really important to do cutting edge research, to get attention, to be on that bleeding edge. Also, we provide real value to our clients. We provide Montana quality customer service. We care about people. We care about that long-term relationship with our clients. And so when we get a client, they stick around. And over time, we've accumulated a client base. So that's been extremely helpful as well.
I asked Frontier Angels Pat LaPointe why so many new startups fail.
Running out of money is what ultimately is the last thing you notice about businesses that fail. Now, the question is, why do they run out of money? In most cases, they run out of money because they fail to achieve what's called product market fit, meaning that they have not been able to establish that they have a solution that the people with the problem are willing to pay for. They may have a solution. It may be an elegant solution. It may be one that it took them years to carefully research and fine-tune, but people weren't willing to pay for it. And so, time and again, as I work with a lot of these early stage companies, I try to help keep them very focused on the fact that it really doesn't matter how much you love the software that you're building, the app that you're building, or how much you love the new molecules that you've been discovering in your lab, or how much you love the sustainable new type of bed sheets that you've been able to engineer out of a more environmentally friendly supply chain. What ultimately matters is whether someone's willing to buy it. And the only way you're going to know that is to get out there on the street and talk to prospective customers and try to sell it and go through the failure iteration cycle until you succeed. And the faster you can work yourself through those failure iteration cycles, the greater the likelihood that you will be able to find your traction and raise more money to continue to grow and not run out of money along the way.
Business, of course, doesn't only revolve around products and technology. Erica von Kleist, award-winning jazz artist, composer, and entrepreneur, shared with me what it takes to be a soul practitioner, musical artist, and still be business savvy.
When I was at Juilliard, there was a music business class, and it wasn't a big focus of the curriculum. And there was some great information in the class, but it didn't go into just some of the basics of business. I mean, when you're in college as a music major, that college should be required to teach you the basics of what a 1099 is. Like, what does it mean to be self-employed? I mean, you're just kind of cast into the world after you graduate as a freelance musician. How do you make that work? Like, what are the legalities business-wise? What are the logistics? How do you book yourself? Things like, you need a promo video, you need recordings. How do you market yourself to people who want to hire you? And this is something I'm very passionate about teaching to college students. And I have been going around the country to schools to do lectures and interviews with students and just talk to them about, hey, you got to start thinking with the other side of your brain if you're going to be successful doing this. And this is something that I really wish had been a focus when I was at college.
Well, looking back now, what lessons would you share with our listeners about being an artist and an entrepreneur?
You can do both. You just have to study. You have to understand the basics of how those two worlds interact with each other. And the musicians who are able to do that are the ones who are the most successful in terms of building a well-rounded career and a stable career.
Lastly, let's revisit my interview with Will Price, who shared a tremendous amount of information about venture funding. Here's a good lesson to end on: what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur.
One of the things that I think that I've kind of agree with is someone once said that purity of motivation is a great predictor of success. And that is, like, why are people doing this? And getting into their life story, the original idea that they came up with, and the sense of passion they have within that idea that demands that they must see it through, almost independent of whether they're going to get paid for it or not. They just believe so importantly in that core idea. And so if experience isn't the measure by which you can judge people, you know, how else are you going to evaluate them? And so to me, it's come down to integrity, you know, willingness to be able to work with them, the fact that they're coachable and they listen to good feedback, but ultimately that they feel truly inspired. As I said earlier, the kind of audacity you need to be able to build something from nothing in the face of competition, challenge, inertia, all the things that keep people from doing things. These are truly motivated people, and that motivation has to be real. It has to be based on the fact that they really truly believe this idea deserves to see the light of day, and not greed. Because greed isn't a sustaining motivation in the face of setback and challenge. And most businesses will go through a significant challenge at some point. And the entrepreneur will question, why am I doing this? Why am I, you know, foregoing pay and opportunity to work in a, you know, more established profession? And I'm, you know, working day and night and not sleeping and the stress level and all the things that go into running your own business. Well, what sees you through, I think, those times and come out the other side is really being inspired by a sense of mission and a belief that what you're doing is truly important. And so I really try to identify, you know, that as an intangible, because defaulting back to a resume that's full of accomplishment, even though it may be tempting to default to supporting people that have a track record of prior success, it certainly isn't indicative in our industry of the potential of untrained people or unexperienced people to go on and do great things.
If any or all of this has piqued your interest, or you want to re-listen to your favorite episode, browse the program at mtpr.org or subscribe to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs wherever you get your podcasts. It's been incredibly satisfying to complete yet another season. Our talented and engaging guests have without a doubt broadened my understanding of the business world and entrepreneurship, as I hope they have done for you as well. None of this would have been possible at all without the nimble production assistance from Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin. Kudos to both of you. Until next time, this is Arnie Sherman wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives. And from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.